Welcome back to the Muddy River Tactical Podcast. I'm joined today by Brett and Kevin, as always, and we got some special guests with us. On our last episode, we ended off talking with Brett Courtwright from War Horses for Veterans. And we were going to go take lunch and then come back and talk about War Horses. And we figured it'd be a lot better to come out to War Horses, see the facility, get the grand tour, and actually be able to speak with some knowledge about War Horses. And I got to tell you, we took a tour here. It is an incredible facility. So without further ado, I'm going to give it over to Brett, and you can introduce your buddy here. And kind of.
Yeah, thank you for having me back, and appreciate you guys wanting to come out and see our place. I spoke with you guys last time and kind of introduced myself, but I figured it'd be good to bring on Jake Greenleaf, who's our ranch manager out here. And yeah, I'll toss it to you and let you introduce yourself.
Well, what all do you want to know? You want me to start at the beginning of life?
Yeah, let's just give you a little background. Tell us what makes you Superman, and we'll go from there.
Oh, heck, I guess I'm far from that. But like I said, my name's Jake Greenleaf. I grew up in a small town in Illinois outside of a town called Monmouth. I grew up in a farm community, really, and just had the great opportunity of being around that growing up. I ended up joining the Marine Corps right out of high school and spent about 10 years there, just shy of. I ended up getting in an accident in 2015. I was in a helicopter crash while training here in the States, and spent quite a bit of time in the Traumatic Brain Injury Center, and got out in 17 and then ended up here.
What did you do in the Marines?
I was in the infantry. So I was 0341. I was an infantry mortarman.
Okay, how's your hearing after all that?
Yeah, it was it's pretty shot. I generally wear hearing aids, but they're in my bag. I forgot to put them in this morning. So
my brother-in-law did artillery for the Army, and his hearing shot. Yeah. He's got the hearing aids too.
So. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Have you always been around horses, or is it kind of a thing that after getting out of the military?
Yeah, I've been around horses pretty much my whole life. My grandpa was pretty big into horses. Then I was just fortunate, like I said, to be around good people growing up, and that my brother ended up working for a gentleman named Gene, and he had a pile of horses. And so I kind of grew up around it. That would be my oldest brother, and so I hung around that quite a bit. He ended up going to college for that, and then he went a different route, obviously, than I did. And after high school, like I said, I left it and didn't touch it until I got out of the Marine Corps.
So after going through like the Marines and all that stuff, do you find horses therapeutic to you personally? Is that kind of what brought you back here, or how do you end up at War Horses?
Okay, so yeah, I think I took a lot for granted right off the bat, to be honest with you, on the horse side of things. I do think they are very helpful in a lot of different ways. Not just therapeutic, but to be able to reset you a little bit, if that makes sense, you know? Mm-hmm. To answer the second part of that, how I got here was probably in 2019. I ended up coming here with a friend, and then my wife and I owned horses, and we started bringing horses down here and riding during clinics and bringing horses down and equipment down and stuff like that and helping out and being a part of probably four clinics or so. And then finally, Patricia and Andy Brown, the co-founders here, pulled me into their house and said, "You want a job?" And I was working for a law enforcement agency at that time back home. And I was like, "Heck yeah, let's get out of Illinois, number one."
Oh, I bet.
And two, I mean, why not? Let's go work for somebody, you know, and help others and kind of give back to the community.
That's so awesome.
So on a typical day as ranch manager, I'm sure, you know, and we'll probably talk more about Yellowstone later, but people probably have a glorified version of being ripped. So your day, yeah. What's a day as a ranch manager in real life consist of?
A lot. Every day is different. You never know really what you're going to walk into. You know, some mornings you walk in and everything's just peachy keen and everybody's happy and all the horses are happy and all the people are happy. And then other days you walk in and it's a cluster that you're just trying to unwind. I mean, you worry about everything from the weather to the grass to the horses to, you know, to the feed to what supplements we have and where money's going and what fence you got to fix and, you know, what you have to doctor around and stuff like that, and who you got to call, and do we need a vet to come in? Do we have to take a horse in? And do we got time for that? And there's just so much that goes into it day to day, and that's what's fun about it. In a lot of ways, it can be stressful as well, but in a lot of ways, it's super fun because you get to figure out a little bit of chaos every now and then, you know.
And, you know, from my management background and stuff, any kind of management, but I'm sure especially more so doing what you're doing, you don't have a set schedule. You may be working 5 in the morning till 10 at night if you got stuff going on, or you might not make it home, or you might have a lighter day too.
There's been many nights I've stayed here in this bunkhouse, you know, and just, I got a wife and 3 kids, live about 20 minutes away or so, I guess, maybe, but yeah, there's many nights where we spend a lot of time here and trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Yeah, there's zero set schedule. There could be a 3 a.m. morning. There could be a, you know, a 3 p.m. night, you know, but then you could turn around and the next day be 12 hours, 24 hours, 36 hours. You know, you're kind of sticking around. You know, there's weeks that we stay here, you know, especially when winter hits or kind of like what we're getting ready to run up on now. There's going to be a big weather change and stuff like that. We worry about that a lot with the horses and the big weather changes and colic and when it gets really hot and then it dives off at the end of the, you know, it can cause some changes in the horses.
Is it like moisture gets in the feed? Is that what gets them colicky, or is it just
the rapid change in weather? I mean, there's a slew of things, but that's kind of what we are worried about right now, you know, especially coming into summertime and how it is here. Yeah. You have a false summer and then a false spring and then a false summer and then a false spring and then we're back into winter in April.
And then you add mowing season in there, so now you have all the grounds to mow and time to allocate for that. Then you have our groups and, I mean,
the clinics.
There's a lot of stuff that goes into our day-to-day out here.
So how many people do you guys have working for you? And I've got volunteers, I'm sure, too. So how many people are out here on a daily basis, would you say?
So typically there's Jake and I, our media director Jay, our ranch hand Eric, and then Kendall Gammons, our chief development officer. So those are basically everybody that's here every day throughout the week, Monday through Friday. You know, Eric and Jay, they live on grounds, but typically if we have a program or something like that, you're probably you have about 15, 18 people here every day for all the meals.
That includes the participants.
Yeah, it includes the participants. Okay. So our participants are typically 5. We have one psychologist or therapist that is here throughout the week as well, one or two mentors, and then the staff. So
kind of your programs, we've started talking about those. You guys are War Horses for Veterans, but you also do first responders, law enforcement. Who all do you serve, and how do your programs, I guess it's a big question. So first of all, what's your target group that you're trying to help out here?
I think on the military side, you know, combat veterans and active duty, we just started kind of being able to get some active duty people in. So it's been pretty nice on that end of stuff as well. But combat veterans on the military side, and I think on the law enforcement side, you know, we just want, or first responder side, not just law enforcement. We got fire, EMS. I mean, we even include the FBI in there every now and then. We've had KBI out. We've had everybody.
Pretty much everybody in the metro has been out to our facility in one way or the other, whether it's, you know, a one-day program, which we don't really do anymore now because we're really looking to get the highest impact for the participants. So they'll stay on site here in this bunkhouse. We have 5 rooms. We've just known that it's better to get people here a long time versus just scratching the surface with a day.
And yeah, we weren't really getting the full effect of what we're trying to provide everybody. We were doing one-day clinics, and then it just didn't. It was wearing us down just day after day after day cycle. I mean, week after week after week, days and days in a row. And then, so we just opted just to stick with our 5-day and make everything kind of work that way.
Well, it also wore our horses down pretty quickly,
yeah,
too.
Oh, I bet.
Their mental capacity, they'd get frustrated. They get burned out, too. I mean, they're dealing with, you know, multiple people telling them what to do. And there's just certain amount of frustration that can come with that as well.
And that's something I hadn't even thought about, because you're not out riding ATVs. You're riding a living, breathing creature with its own thoughts and emotions. And yeah, you got to take that into account.
Yeah. Yeah. They take a lot on, and just like us, I mean, they've got to deal with everything emotionally, and they've got to deal with your emotions. You know, we talk about how the horse can feel your heart rate up to 4 feet away, you know, and it can impact your breathing. There's science out there now that's trying to show that a horse's heart rate and a human's heart rate can kind of sync up as they start to work together and stuff like that, and you can affect each other, which we do know that the human's heart rate can affect the horse's heart rate. That's been proven. And so think about, you know, 5 people to 10 people on those 1 day clinics every single day, you know, changing out new people, and that, you know, we change out the horses throughout the day, but it didn't really matter. They started getting really worn out and frustrated with it, because they were trying to understand, about the time that they would understand each other is be like, okay, it's time to kind of switch, and nobody really got the full effect, and the horse didn't really get the full effect.
Well, so most of the people coming, they have zero horse background for the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think our last group was the first group we had where the participants had some horse experience, but a majority of our participants is slim to none.
Now, is it easier, because I know, like, teaching people to shoot, they don't have bad habits if they've never shot before. Is it the same for teaching people how to ride a horse, or should people be nervous if they have no horse experience about coming to do this type of clinic?
I think so. I think it does work both ways. I completely understand your topic or your question there. I think it is good. I think what's great about it, and what we've learned about people in this culture, especially we're lucky to have some professionals that are, you know, champions across the board and in horse disciplines, come out here and they say, you know, what's great about our groups is the clientele are so willing to listen, and you can tell them and they follow direction pretty well. And so I think that's more than just the no bad habits. Everybody gets on a horse and tries to, you know, control it rather than letting the horse really work underneath them. I think that's what we run into more than anything. But I guess nervousness of just being on a 1,000-pound animal is kind of what, you know, gets everybody thinking more than most. But
we're talking a little bit about participants coming into your groups and finding groups and 5-day clinics. Just, I know we usually do this at the end as well, but if they don't want to make it to the end all the time, what's a way a participant can find you? Just kind of early on, just kind of get that out there. You have a website. How do they find you?
Yes, our website is whfv.org. You can search War Horses for Veterans. We're on all of our social media platforms. Jake and I think everybody's on LinkedIn, but you could do a search for War Horses for Veterans. All of our applications are on our website. Kind of gives you an overview, snapshot of the program throughout the week. So, War Horses for Veterans.
And how many participants or clinics do you guys do? Is it every week you do one? Is it kind of a ongoing deal?
We typically try to do, so last year we had 8 full week programs, but we were also closing out the 1 day programs.
Gotcha.
This year we are shooting for 14 program weeks. Some of those are training days for our Vegas competition that's in August that will take veterans to Vegas with our horses, and they'll compete in the National Stock Horse Association. But I'd say 10 a year is probably a good goal.
Yeah.
I mean,
so overall. That's neat. So you have other, after they're done with 5-day program, they're not just done.
Right.
So you guys continue working with.
Yeah, I think on twofold for that, we always ask everybody to come back as mentors. We're here every dang day, pretty much, minus Sundays. We go to church, but you know, if you want to come out, that gate's open unless we're out of town.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, not only, especially for the local people, I think that's something to really, you know, be available where people can just show up and be out here. Especially once they come through, we have a little bit more knowledge of who somebody is, and it's a lot easier to really gauge what they're going to be able to fit into if they want to show up out here. You know, if we're comfortable putting them back up on horses, or maybe we need to start somewhere else and kind of work on something. Or a lot of people show up and just want to scoop poop, you know. They just want to clean stalls with Eric and hang out.
Just busy work.
That's
a lot of our, you know, our outlook on volunteers, as well as, you know, a lot of organizations have volunteers, they have a volunteer coordinator, and, you know, our day-to-day, depending on who's here, you know, we may not be able to accommodate that all the time, but being able to have former participants, especially local, that all they want to do is come out, you know, clean stalls for, you know, the first couple hours and then go home. It's that mental reset that they need, and they're still being engaged with us.
Yeah, and to kind of circle on that too is we're not a one and done place. It's better for us, for volunteers, you know, to be participants in a way, because they have a week, at least snapshot, week long snapshot of kind of how the world works around here day to day, if that makes sense, you know. And so more than just regular old volunteers, if we have a people show up out here and volunteer, and we're very thankful for it. We'd like to see the participants come back and volunteer, because it's re-engaging them. It's making it to where it's, again, not a one-and-done type program. There's a lot of that out there, like, hey, thanks for coming in, see you later, you know, and then they never talk to me again.
A T-shirt and a hat. Thanks, yeah.
And so not only that, yeah, we do Vegas. We've been blessed to do that, and we're going to do it again this year in August. At the end of August, I think it starts the 19th, and I think they actually show on the 24th. It's just that last Saturday. And we try and bring them back in, and we try and get them set up with other trainers in their area so they can reach out to them and ride more and be more involved in something locally, because we know it's not always the easiest thing to get back to Kansas City for everybody. They got lives and jobs and trying to make a successful life after they've gotten out of the military 9 times out of 10, or you know, they've still got a law enforcement job or a fire job or EMS. So
what's a typical week for a participant look like out here?
So we fly them in on Sunday evenings usually, and then we kind of break bread over there in the lounge that you guys got to see at night, and kind of get everybody acquainted, do the introductions, say, Brett's Brett, I'm me, and who are you kind of deal. And then Mondays, we start off kind of every day. We start off about 7:30, and we start cleaning stalls and take care of the horses first, and then breakfast after that. And then once we get done with breakfast, usually everybody starts chatting and stuff like that, which is good camaraderie and stuff. And we start off in the round pens in the indoor and work on the ground with the horses. And then we do bareback here. We do some bareback riding. So once we get done with the groundwork, we put them on bareback. They learn to walk, trot, and lope bareback on specific horses. I think that puts people in a very vulnerable position to trust. And that's something that a lot of people don't know how to do anymore, is trust something else that you don't really have control over. We want to control everything, you know? Excuse me. And then usually by Tuesday night or Wednesday, we'll have everybody in the saddle and walk, trot, and loping in the saddle. And then it's hell-bent to the weekend. You know, we just Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I mean, we're going 100 miles an hour in the outdoor. And I think that's what separates us from most clinics, is when we push the envelope on the horses and we really try and push people past their comfort limits, you know, horseback. And we have great horses here that allow us to do that. They're not going to do anything ridiculous, but they're also not duds. They're not your, you know, your dude ranch horses that are just going to kind of walk lazily along. The horses we use for the clinic are the same horses that we use in horse shows and stuff like that. So they still got fire. They still got drive. They got a lot of cow sense to them. They got a lot of knowledge and an understanding of what they're being asked, and so it makes it a lot easier for us.
So the participants, you're teaching them how to ride. You're doing some roping. Are you cutting cows? Are you doing all the above?
Yes, sir. I mean, it just depends on the group. Some groups are different than others. Some groups progress faster than others. Some groups request to do different things, you know, like we've had a group in and they really enjoyed cutting. And so we've kind of stuck around cutting and stuff like that. And we've had another groups that really enjoy the roping side of things. And so we kind of stick to the sled and we might rope a few live steers and stuff like that. What's great about what we have here is that nothing is really limited in many ways. We get to push the envelope in many different directions, and we have a good variety of horses that are generally great at everything. And then we've been, again, fortunate to make some good friends that are professional trainers, and then they come up and help us, and they can, you know, take these guys and work with cattle in the pen, and they run down the fence. If you've ever watched Raining Cow Horse, you know, they run down the fence with a steer and they slide and stop and turn and all that fun, happy jazz, and they have a lot of fun.
It can be very nerve-wracking, but it's also exhilarating. I mean, and, you know, starting out like through the round pen, like Jake was talking about the round pen, I mean, that's kind of the starting point for horses, for people. And, you know, throughout the whole week, the biggest thing we're really trying to teach people is how to breathe again. And that's kind of the focus of, you know, being able to take a step back from the noise, whether it's work, military service, but just being able to kind of learn to relax again. And so that round pen on day one is crucial to the rest of the week. I mean, that's where a lot of people have the most impact and breakthrough is in the round pen. And you're not even on the horse. You're moving a horse in the round pen. You're learning to regulate yourself. And, you know, that's a huge deal day one to set you up for success later in the week.
Yeah. Well, and I know I'd kind of asked you when we were doing our tour, it's learning how to, like, and you'd mentioned learning how to trust the horse and work as a team. And because I was asking Brett, I said, so when you get on here, the horse pretty much kind of knows what to do, and you're worried about the rope and you're working as a team. So he knows how to, you know, angle a maneuver against the cow or, you know, what you're doing. So it's really kind of building that teamwork together in something that you're not used to doing.
In a way, you know, it's the horses aren't just plumb automatic by any means. Like I said, they have a mind of their own a lot, you know, and you still have to ride that horse. You know, they're not, like I said, deadheads that are just plain and have no mind to really move or anything like that. You still gotta, I mean, they generally know, okay, if I'm tracking the dummy, I should be here, right? But you still gotta have some input to it all. So there is a lot more than you have to, like you said, make that teamwork.
Well, where do most of these horses come from? I know you champion lines of horses. Where do they mostly come from?
Some wonderful people. We've some of our board members here, you know, they've helped us out a lot. Wayne and Michelle Hansen from Iowa. They have Hansen Quarter Horses. I think originally War Horses pretty much, they donated the majority of the horses to start this off, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And it was before my time here, but I know where they come from. And then, thankfully, here lately, you know, we've had a lot of people that have invested in War Horses in many ways, and one of those ways. Sorry, I went to school in Illinois in public school. is they're always looking for horses that they think might fit the bill here, right? So we get calls quite a bit and just say, hey, you know, you might want to look at this horse, or hey, maybe you should come try out this horse and figure out what's going on. And so we've been working with a group of people, and 9 times out of 10, people know what we're looking for. But we generally buy our horses. Obviously, we're a 501c3, and if somebody is of the status of needing a tax write-off as well, you know, we've worked on paying part and tax writing off part, and stuff like that. we're looking for pretty specific horses, and they're not really cheap.
Well, and that was my thing, because my wife had horses in the past, and she had entry-level horses mm-hmm. that were, in my opinion, worthless. I mean, right. they had no more idea what to do than she did.
Yeah.
Neither one of them knew anything. So trying to get a horse that is capable to push the envelope,
yep.
but also be, in a way, safe enough to trust somebody brand new coming in here.
Right.
To build trust, you don't want to put them on the wild, yeah. crazy horse. So I know nothing horse related is cheap. So that's why I was kind of curious.
Not in today's day and age. Back to Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Everything got really expensive. Yeah, it's not cheap, but we have to have a specific horse, you know? And so that's what we're
doing. Have you guys ever, and this is just curiosity, because in the past we actually bought a car from a Kansas City police, but he is on the mounted patrol or whatever they call the police horses,
mm-hmm.
and it was down in Kansas City somewhere, but he worked there and we picked up the car from there, long story short, but he showed us the whole facility and all their horses, and they got like a bunch of donated horses, but they were kind of the same way. Do you guys ever see any horses like that come out of patrol stuff, or not really?
Not necessarily our cup of tea. Okay. I don't think yeah. We like to stick around like the rope horses, the cow horses, the cutters and stuff like that, just because it allows us again to do more than just ride around in circles. Like we can,
yeah.
by the end of the week, we can be roping or cutting or
cow. So you horsing. Want your horses to push a little more than maybe what yeah. those horses
yeah.
do.
Yeah. yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. They're those athletic. Those
are like giant brick walls
for yeah.
the police horses.
These are athletes full on. And I think the oldest, well, we got one older horse that we still use that's close to 20, but most of our horses are within 6 to 12 years old, you know. So we're using, I mean, reasonably young horses for what people would think on a therapeutic type horse, if that makes sense.
And they're not the nose to butt trail horse. I mean, yeah, they can walk in a line with everybody, but I mean, these guys are, like you said, they're athletes. I mean, they're wanting to work. It empowers the horse. They like it. They want to do it. And you know, I think maybe I told you guys last time, I mean, it's really trying to give people this rocket ship to go to the moon. I mean, you can do it. You can slide this horse, you can spin this horse, you can do all these great things, but that's what's cool about our program, is being able to have a horse with that capability in your hands and to push yourself. And I think that's where the success comes from, is having it accessible and being able to do that. But it comes back to the participant and the person yeah. riding that horse.
Well, and I don't know, getting back to, you're getting out of your one day programs, just hearing this, there's more, like even a week, you can't teach people, even you're just scratching the surface, like entry level after a week. You know, they're learning stuff. I can't imagine trying to teach people how to even be comfortable on a horse in one day, let alone get more advanced.
It's very physically and mentally demanding.
Yeah.
It's a heck of a program.
Yeah. We don't even know how we're comfortable doing it, but it works out. You know, I mean, there are some uncomfortable times. It just depends on the person, you know. But again, it goes back to the horses that we have, and we've come to learn who's good with who, and we can kind of evaluate days one and two, kind of what we're going to stick on what and who may be riding what. And we just try to take out as many of the variables as we can. But at the end of the day, you still got a human brain trying to control a horse brain that has, you know, it's a mind of its own. And who knows if a leaf's going to blow across the arena, you know, on a Tuesday, and one of the horses is going to say, what the heck's a leaf, you know?
Praying to God that yeah. somebody stays in the center of that saddle and doesn't come off.
But, yep.
I mean, we have people that do come off.
Yep.
You know, we try to, like you said, manage as many variables and risk assessment as we can. But in the end, I mean, you're on a living, breathing.
And I think that's what's different about us too, is we're not against that. I mean, as much as we don't want people to fall off, like, we're here to push the envelope. That's what makes us different. That's what we enjoy doing. We want to give people the opportunity to ride, like Brett said. I mean, the Ferraris of horses. And don't get me wrong, I mean, a lot of these horses are here out of, not that they're bad, they just aren't the tippy top. There's bigger, better, stronger, faster, quicker horses out there, you know, than what we have, but they're pretty special.
But they're not LeBron James or Patrick Mahomes, but they're definitely an NFL player.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, for sure. That's a good way to put it.
Well, I think at the end of the week, like for somebody coming in to gain confidence or whatever their, you know, main goal is here, when you do it on an animal that is capable, you would feel better about it at the end of the week than, oh, I sat on a donkey that goes around the,
right,
you know, so, at the fair.
Like this last group that came in that had a little bit of horse experience, you know, they just said, I can't believe you guys allow people to ride this caliber of horse. Mm-hmm. And I think it speaks to what we have here a little bit because they've got some experience. They've been able to ride stuff. A couple of them have horses of their own, and they're just kind of what we're talking about, just a horse that they can go out and saddle up and take off and ride, but there's nothing to it. I mean, they just kind of sit in the saddle, and the horse just kind of lazily goes around and stuff, whereas again, you've got to actively ride these horses, and it speaks to the horse's mind themselves too, because they can turn that on when they need to, and they can also just be a horse that somebody can sit on and kind of walk around a little bit. But like Brett was saying, like if you figure out how to ask for it, you can do just about anything.
The thing I think, like in just hearing about your clientele being special forces guys, military, you know, first responders, most people that are drawn to those jobs are alpha type males anyway.
Yes, sir.
So they want to ride the alpha type horse. They're not, you know, the more timid people that want the more timid, they're going to really appreciate and gain more out of those upper level horses.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, what's crazy is those horses can humble you very quickly and kind of give you a little bit of a check. And, you know, I think which is good because, I mean, it can help you refocus on, okay, maybe I shouldn't have done that, but how can I do it the right way, you know? So it's kind of cool to have that caliber of horse.
Well, and even on the tour, we're out there, and I couldn't believe how big some of the horses were. You know, I've got very limited horseback riding. I've been on a few trail rides, and that's it. And you're out there, and you're like, oh, watch this one because he can get feisty, you know? So, and I wasn't even on him. I'm seeing on the other side of the pen from him. I'm like, all right, I respect this horse already.
Yeah, they're big animals. For sure, they're 1,000 pounds generally, you know, give or take. Some are bigger, some are less. I mean, in our barn, you know, I mean, sure, there's huge horses elsewhere that are way bigger than that, but yeah.
So with the program, so like during the day, they're doing all horse stuff. In the evening, does it continue? What's like your evenings during that week?
I mean, there is a lot of horsemanship throughout the week, but, you know, when there's downtime, you know, they could be learning how to rope. So we have, you know, a lot of roping dummies on the ground, learning to, you know, keep rope management and being able to be able to rope off a horse later in the week. But we also have, you know, an on-site therapist or psych. So there's after actions, which are typically before dinner. So we go over, you know, the highs, the lows of the day, goals. We typically have a journal entry that they'll journal on overnight and we'll discuss the next day. There's occasionally presentations from, you know, whether it's Kendall or, you know, maybe somebody else, but we also teach a communication class called E-Colors, which is, I mean, that in a nutshell, I mean, it's learning why you communicate the way you do and how you communicate. And here's a couple ways to maybe communicate better with so-and-so. There's talks of, you know, spouse relationships, kids relationships, you know, dealing with trauma. I mean, we sit around the fireplace out there, the fire pit out there by the waterfall. And, you know, it's kind of open there. You know, I think Jake explains it the best of, we have an agenda, we have a plan to get there, but how we get there could be dependent on the group, but really focusing on the mental health side as well, because I mean, people do come to us and they're wanting to improve the overall quality of life, and that's what we do.
Yeah, I think what makes us different with all of that is two things. One, we're not just horsemanship. You know, we're trying to give people the impact through the horses on the mental health side of stuff. And two, there is downtime, right? Because we're always searching for something to do. Even as just men in general, we're always just trying to fill maybe the agenda in our life and make sure that we're busy and accomplishing stuff. And I think people, with who we serve here at War Horses are even worse at that, and trying to, there always has to be an agenda, right? And that's what one of the guys walked up to me one time and was like, okay, what's next? Okay, what's next? And by the end of like day two, I was like, look, buddy, you can go relax on the couch.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is time to hang out. Everything doesn't have to be a scheduled, like, full-on event. Like, you can take a step back and relax. And he probably slept on the couch for about 3 hours. And we have people, we have a chair over there that kind of puts you in zero gravity and stuff like that, too. And we've had people, I mean, knocked clean out.
And we we'll adjust based on the participants. I mean, if you got two people sleeping on a couch, they probably need it. They probably haven't slept in days or weeks or months or
had a good sleep forever,
or just been able to enjoy a good meal and just sit and just be present in what's going on in their life. And that's huge. I mean, we push that a lot, is be present. You know, be aware of what's now.
Well, and that's what, like, to me, being an outsider looking in, where the week-long program makes the most sense, because you get a guy that comes, you know, on Monday or whenever you start, super vulnerable to whatever's going to happen. And then as he starts gaining trust and then more people around and talking, it opens him up. You know, the horse part is the main part to start that, but it goes so much deeper than that, because they have issues that you guys may not even know, you know,
right,
that it just opens them up to feel comfortable to tackle those. Because like you were saying, guys from the military and stuff, that they don't know any different than just go, 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 go.
It's very regimented.
It's hard to, from the guys, I'm not military, but the guys I've seen out even for years, they're still like, they don't know how to live a quote unquote normal life in some ways, because they're used to, we do this, 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 and this. And,
right. Your schools are regimented down to the, I mean, to the hour. Mm-hmm. Your lunches to the minute. You know, your days are planned in so many different ways, and there is some good to that. But if you can't stop that for a few hours of your life, I mean, there's probably something wrong about it. You know, if you can't sit down on a couch and just take a breath and relax and literally just kind of work on yourself for a minute. You probably should learn how to do that, you know?
So you guys, you're saying you're shooting for 14 week-long classes or sessions or whatever you want to call them. Are those pretty much like you work with certain organizations that bring these guys in? Or like say there's somebody that thinks it's beneficial to them, do they have to be through somebody else to get to you guys? Or how does that work from like a program standpoint?
I mean, a lot of our participants, especially now, are by word of mouth. I mean, people go back to their units or their firehouse, PDs, whatever, and, you know, they know better than anybody else how to promote the program. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it may not be beneficial to this guy, but this guy needs it and would exceed at it. But, you know, there's also, I mean, we have those week-long groups, but there's also, you know, area agencies or, you know, that comes up that's like, you know, we need to send people to you. There's something happened at the PD or the firehouse or whatever. And, you know, if we can make it work, we will. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of the stuff that we do outside of that. But typically it's participants. And I mean, yeah, we're on all the platforms and all that, but a lot of it's by word of mouth. I mean,
that's, I think that's our biggest success.
Yeah.
We've been able to have a few partnerships with some other organizations lately to be able to bring in people and stuff like that. And we're hoping for more of that, because that helps us out too, right? I mean, we want to make sure that the people that are coming in are going to invest their time wisely, you know what I mean? Because it's investing our time wisely. And just like we were talking about with this last group from the Charlie 5 group, you know, it takes us a lot to put these groups on. We're prepping for weeks before, you know, before even other groups end. Sometimes we're prepping for the next group and getting everything scheduled out and getting flights and getting all this stuff put together and making sure, you know, that everything's done. And even though I was out sick, you know, these guys just did basically three groups and back to back. It was on a week, off a week, on a week, off a week, on a week, you know, and thankfully I missed the first two. I was in the hospital, but it worked out for me, not for them. But, you know, they're already cleaning the lounge.
Still haven't had a day off.
Yeah, they're already cleaning the lounge, you know, but they're in it on Sunday and they're getting ready for the next group, you know, a couple weeks or a week and a half-ish later. Go ahead.
No, for people who want to get involved, and whether that may be donating money, coming to, you know, volunteer at the facility, doing things like that, can you tell them, like, what their money's going to help? And I know it just comes better from you. What kind of breakthroughs do you see with these people that are dealing with stuff? Like, where's their money going and how's it really helping?
So I'll say, for Brett can really talk more on the money side of things, but I can say this side of stuff. Like, everything is paid for the participant, whether they're local or they're from, you know, we had some New York State troopers come in. We fly in people from Washington. The flights are paid for. The food's paid for all week. About the only thing, any expense anybody would ever want to have is, one, getting to the airport themselves. And then if they want to buy something before they get on that airplane or on the trip here, you know, generally if they're flying in, I mean, we'll take them to lunch right off the bat or whatever as soon as they land, if they get around lunchtime or whatnot. But everything is paid for.
So they have nothing to worry about. It's
nothing.
Bring your clothes and your personal hygiene. I mean, that's basically what we send out to people. And, you know, as far as the impact, I mean, there's been, I can't count how many people have had, I mean, truly, you know, emotional breakthroughs around the horses, around the fire pit talking. I mean, we've seen tons of people just break down crying, sobbing. We've had people have, you know, come in with a maybe not the best attitude on life, but, you know, they leave energized. They leave fulfilled. They have a plan. They have structure of how can I make my life better? How can I fix this, that, and the other? But
we also create a community here with some of these guys. We've had people come in and tell us, like, they don't have any support structure. Mm-hmm. They can't go home, especially on the PD side of stuff. I mean, we have guys come in and say, I can't go home and talk about what happened. I can't go home because my spouse has literally said they don't want to hear about it.
Or they're tired of hearing about it.
And so we have group chats and emails and all that stuff, and we try to stay connected with everybody for what we can. But those people stay connected for sure, and it creates a support structure in a way, and it creates like a little bit of an outlet for people that, you know, just on, was it yesterday? I mean, a group from last November, we started, you know, just, hey, how's everything going, guys? You know? And so it creates a lot of community.
Yeah. And as you know, as far as the money goes, I mean, yeah, we're a nonprofit. I mean, every penny counts. You know, we thank, you know, God what we do get. We're very thankful for the donors, and you know, there's a lot of people that are monthly donors. They just set up a reoccurring payment every, you know, whatever day in the month, and it's $50, $100, $25, you know, that goes to keep the horses fed. It keeps the power on. It keeps people here to mow, to keep the grounds where it's at, you know, and it helps us provide services beyond what people see on social media. There's a lot of other stuff that our organization does and offers to the community, you know, as a whole. You know, every agency in Kansas City knows if they need to use our lounge for some form of debrief after a traumatic event, it's open. You know, as long as we don't have a group here, it's theirs. They don't have to pay for that. They use it.
Well, and the cost for horses is just, you know, we talked about, you know, Yellowstone, we keep kind of joking around about it, but like the cost of horses after that show came out has went through the roof.
Yeah. I think the cost of, everything has gone through the roof lately, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, but the cheapest part of a horse is the purchase price.
Yeah.
You know, hay costs a lot of money. Grain costs a lot of money. supplements that we give our horses to keep them healthy and keep their bills. Keep their stuff going has cost a lot of money, you know. So there's a lot to everything that's going on with that and how things work. And it's horses are expensive, and we've got quite a few of them.
Well, and you think too, you know, as far as like, yeah, the Yellowstone and all that, but you know, you look at COVID, people were able to work remote. They moved to places they never thought they'd be able to move to, and hey, let's buy some horses now. We can buy land, and then you have Yellowstone, and so there were so many factors in that that I think we're contributing to the cost of horses going up.
So if you go to your website, is there somewhere like the average person, like people that are our customers and stuff, can they go and is there like a donate thing straight through there, or where do they go to do that?
They can go right to our website, you know, warhorsesforveterans.org, whfe.org, and there's donate tabs, there's support tabs. Our biggest event that we host for our, I guess you could call it our gala, but it's our main fundraiser of the year. We call it the Derby Party at Warhorses. This year it's May 4th here at our facility. We still have a handful of tables left, but that's where we have a keynote speaker. We have a live band. I mean, typically we have about 450 people on our grounds in the indoor arena. We put a nice hardwood floor in there made out of plywood. So, but a lot goes into it. But there's, you know, Tito's Vodka is our premier sponsor again this year. We have a lot of good companies that sponsor every year, but you can go right to our website. There's donate tabs, support tabs. There's info on our programs, the staff, the team, and absolutely.
And know. That's why we are so excited to do this podcast. Obviously, we've been buddies for a long time, but we're to the point in business where we want to start giving back to people, you know, however that can be.
Yeah.
And so many of our customers, even locally, would give back to something if they knew where it was going, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in this day and world, there's so many places you can give money.
Yeah.
And sometimes pennies on the dollar is going to help something. But
yeah,
when people know and see the impact, like that video you showed us.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't even want to watch it because I'm going to cry here at lunch, you know.
Yeah.
When people see stuff like that, there is good in the world. They just need to know the right place to put it. So I think this is an awesome way, especially locally, for people to know that.
Well, and that's the biggest thing too. I mean, we're based here in Kansas City. We may travel to Oklahoma or Texas, you know, for some of our, you know, connections to fulfill a program or add to a program. But, you know, the people we serve, you know, Kansas City, yeah, we get vets from all over the nation. But we're not a massively large organization, and you know, definitely having trying to get as much impact Kansas City and let people know that we're here in Kansas City.
So, on your guys' business model moving forward, is your goal to keep expanding to do more sessions and grow, or are you trying to get to like a certain point where you can maximize
the groups? I think that's kind of a double-edged deal for us. On you know, in order to grow, we got to make sure we do it right, you know, and so we don't just want to start going all over and going in half-cocked, I guess is a better way to put it.
For sure.
Everywhere. So we have a great base here. We have a great facility here. We're already able to manage this and fly people in and have the impact that we want and get them into the heart of the country, into Kansas City, and get them into War Horses. You know, yeah, it'd be great to grow, and I think we are starting to see that in a way, but we've got to be able to fund it. We've got to be able to make sure that we do it the right way, and you know, for me, on my side of things, to grow is we're going to need more people and more horses, mainly more horses, you know, to be able to facilitate doing more groups. And And we're all for serving as many people as we can, you know, and it's just trying not to run through what we have already.
Yeah, and I think that's would be like the main question for people, because there's always people around that will donate. I mean, obviously, you guys, you're not blessed with a lot of people that donate big sums of money to you guys. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot more people that would do that. And I think as you get the word out there, the amount of people that you guys benefit or could benefit is so large, but it's just those, like Kyle said, the alpha males that almost won't admit that they need help or right. whatever, you know, and just get the word out there. I think you could benefit a lot of people, but you're at that struggle of, well, where do we put that many horses? How do we get that many people? You know,
yeah.
it takes a lot to get there, too.
We're typically, you know, I feel like we're a good starting block for people to have that first discussion on mental health and know that, you know, it's okay to go and look for, you know, clinical help or reach out to people and have resources available. But, you know, as far as growth, you know, we're also, you know, hopefully this summer we're going to have, you know, an online community, you know, more or less kind of like a LinkedIn in a way, but participants can be given a login profile, and companies and sponsors and partners, you know, they have profiles on there that, you know, maybe people are getting out of the military or they're leaving, you know, the first responder realm, but you can put resumes on there. So we're trying to build our growth as well within the community in ways that may not always be on a horse, but being able to have a community of support with education on mental health. You know, I met with a pretty nice sized bank, you know, last month, and, you know, they would like to help in a way of teaching people how to budget, how to, you know, manage their finances when they get out. What is a 401k? What's a Roth IRA? You know, what are these things that complicate life? But if you have the tools in the Warhorse tool belt to offer that beyond our gates, beyond the horses, that's where our growth in certain aspects, I think we're going to really grow.
Yeah, because you could step out there and help people in a non-direct way. They don't have to come here to help them, you know.
Right.
A lot of people don't know where to turn for help on whatever it may be.
Yeah, a lot of stuff is done for you, especially in the military side of things. I mean, you're just along for the ride and collecting a paycheck, and then you get out and you have to be a big boy, whether you're a big boy at 24 or you're a big boy at 34, you know, or 44 or
yeah.
whenever.
Yeah.
You actually have to figure out what real life is, and the house isn't necessarily, you know, there for you on base, and you know, your retirement's not just there. And
I never really realized that until I had a driver that drove for me for a while, and the guy was a former Army Ranger, great dude, would do anything you told him to.
Mm-hmm.
Where he got off the rails is like if he'd go out and his truck would break down and then there was a hitch in his day, he was so regimented he would call and say, what do I need to do? And he wanted step by step.
Yeah.
And it was kind of, for me, not being in that world, I'm like, well, just do this and just figure it out and go here, call this place. But he wanted really structured.
Yeah, steps. Some people can dang sure be that way, that's for sure. Yeah, there's a lot of structure to it, and there's a lot of like following the lines and stuff, and you got to lay stuff out for certain people. I think just getting out in the real world's a big scary jump that, you know, and I don't know, I never went to college or anything like that, you know, so after 18, obviously joining the Marine Corps and going in that direction, everything's pretty well set up for you, but, you know, getting out and buying my first house, you know, I didn't have to buy a house, I just either rented or lived on base, you know, or even when I was married, we never had to buy a house, so figuring out what the heck a mortgage is, you know, getting out and stuff like that, so we got great connections there too, or one of our board members is a big mortgage guy, I guess, and heck, he helped me when I moved to Kansas City. He looked at everything and all my paperwork and made sure it was all right, you know, just trying to make me understand what the heck was going on and what the heck all that verbiage was in 400 sheets of paper and why, you know, and so making those connections and having people, or like Brett said, around, not just in the money side of stuff, not just in the mortgage side of stuff, but in basic life things and connections to this other thing that hopefully we have set up is going to create it to where businesses can go out and search through Warhorse's participants if that participant wants to be on it. If we have connections with businesses, they can go in there and know the clientele we serve. And they can say, oh, that guy's been through Warhorses. That's probably an all right person, maybe. Let's interview him. And that can be
his app to the top.
Right. You know? And so hopefully we create those connections with big time businesses, especially in the Kansas City area where they can come out and see what we do, and they can be an active part of War Horses.
Well, and that's why we really wanted to come out here, because like Brett was talking, you know, I can tell you about the horses all day long, but when you come out, see the horse, touch it, feel it breathe, you know, pet it on the head, you're like, you get a vastly different respect for what's going on, you know, because a lot of people are just like, oh, it's like, you know, going down to Branson and riding on the trail, and it's not it at all.
No.
Well, and just being in the clean air, I mean, sitting by the water feature or, you know, in the lounge, you know, just sitting and taking a breath from, you know, making holsters and what you guys do, just get that short little break of the noise.
Well, and the other thing I would tell people too is your horses out here live a pretty darn good life. We toured the facility and
they complain about it. They complain.
But like you said, these horses, they like working and they like doing this stuff. So it gives them purpose in their life too. You know, kind of like how some people might have like a working dog in their house that lives in an apartment and it's sitting there and it's anxious all the time. These horses get to go out and do what they're bred to do.
Yeah. Yeah. If you have any question on what our horses look like generally, if you go on any of our social media, most of the ones on social media are our horses. You know, they're very well taken care of. This, we all do a great job here making sure that everything is fitted right and taken care of right, and we have a lot going on there every day of the week.
And we have good partners that, you know, help support us. I mean, a lot of our supplements, I mean,
Platinum Performance,
they're a huge company, and they care about what we do, and they know what we do. They've been to our property. They
send out nutritionists for our horses.
I mean, they do. I mean, they're
make sure that they set up a. I mean, I've got a list of stuff that after we get done with this, I've got to go online and make sure that they send. You know, we've got to go through Platinum and make sure that we get the right supplements based off of what the nutritionist recommends for the horse. I mean, that's how in detailed it is based off of. I mean, it's kind of like a full on. If you were to go to a dietitian. You know, and figure out exactly what you should be doing and stuff like that. That's how we treat our horses, from the amount of hay to the poundage of grain and maybe what type of grain, if we do feed them grain or don't, you know.
A splash of supplement for hay, for gut or skin or, I mean.
Whatever.
It's pretty regimented there.
Yeah, and that's when I was walking around. That's what I was like, man, when my wife had that one horse, I'm like, this one horse is a lot of work. I can't imagine. What do you say? You have 26?
Well, that's on the books, but our programs are 10 to 12.
No, generally for the program horses, they're 12 horses that we have that we use for the program,
But that's still for
it's
three, four, five guys to take care of, and the grounds and classes. You got your hands full.
Oh, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, and being a holster company, we wanted to do something kind of pair up. And Brett, I don't know if you can hold up the holster there for the camera. So we are gonna, I don't know if we've got this finalized yet, but we've got some more horses for veterans pattern holsters that we're going to be putting out, and I think we're going to get a link on your website where people can go there, and the good percentage of the profit's going to go straight to War Horses. We're going to help them out, you know, just because we believe in what they're doing. And that's going to be, we've got inside the waistband, outside the waistband holsters, we've got, you know, almost every combination out there, it seems like. Well, maybe not every light, but we've got almost all the popular guns.
And our customers are really their prime target in a way. I mean, 80% of ours is either ex-military guys, law enforcement. I mean, those are the guys we deal with every day, you know, so getting them to know that, but also a way to give back, like those holsters. Whenever we do it, I think it's going to go through your website. That way we can track it or whatever. But we'll put it out on ours where our customers can go through your website to do it and just give back and help each other. And, you know, a lot of people don't know where to look for stuff. No different than that. They go there and
the world two does. Birds
with one stone. You
can't thank you guys enough for
that. I'm going to get one.
Jake's one.
And then also I was wondering, and we talked about this briefly, but like on your shirts and stuff too, about maybe getting some of those on the website and stuff, and, you know, give back through that way. If our customers go and they want a War Horse shirt, they can add it and put proceeds back to you guys. And just kind of make it where it's everybody helping somebody. So maybe our customers aren't going to go and donate to your page. They go, oh, I'll buy a shirt. Well, that's still, like you said, every penny counts.
And we greatly appreciate
bring awareness to everything.
Well, and your money's not going to buy Brett a new Ferrari or a yacht.
He's already got one.
Yeah, another one. But no, you can feel really confident it's going to a good cause. And like I said, look at the social media. You know, look at some of the videos they put out, and just after touring the facility, I'm really impressed with everything you guys are doing out here. I'm really glad we chose to come out here and get to see it.
Happy you guys got to make it out here. I know it's a little bit of a drive, but
I know you said on that derby party. Do you want to elaborate on that more? You said you had more tickets available. If somebody's interested in that, how does that work?
Yeah, if you go on our website, horsesforveterans.org or whfe.org, there's actually a link for the derby party. You click on that, and it goes right over to tickets and tables if you want to sponsor. You know, we'll put your logo up on all of our stuff. But basically, you know, you come out, and once you purchase a table or tickets, you're there for the whole event. It starts around 3:00 in the afternoon on May 4th and ends with a live band from 8 to 10. So, and there's a live auction. There's the Niagara Brothers from Niagara Western. They're going to be auctioneering this year again. The Suburbans, they're going to be the live band. But, yeah, it's all you can drink and eat. There's mint juleps. There's a cigar lounge. There's
Nick and Jake's will be catering food.
Nick and Jake's is catering all the food. So, I mean, it's a really good event.
Dress up and be ready to have fun.
Yeah, crazy dresses, hats. You know, the women wear all their floral and hats and suits.
Can kids come, or is it adults only?
Adults only.
It is a 21 and over party. Okay. But, yeah, that's
we do provide bus service.
Yep. Parking's off-site, so you'll park literally 8 miles away. And the shuttle brings you right to the barn doors. They're right in the arena.
And there's security out there on the parked cars and stuff like that. We use one of the local high school's parking lots and stuff. And then if you buy your top tier or the second to top tier, you get house service.
Up at your house, yeah. The shuttle will pick you up and drive you here and take you back to your house at the end of the night. So
you can't go wrong with that.
No.
And all the proceeds just go back into the programs.
It goes
into
the back organization. Into the program.
It's basically our operating.
Yeah. You know? I mean, that's.
And your money is really going to change somebody's life.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
I don't know what the percentage is, you know, and kind of going back to what one, I think it was you that said it, is that, you know, some people do worry a lot about kind of nonprofits and where things are going, and especially with the whole, I'll just throw it out there, the whole Wounded Warrior Project thing that everybody saw on the news, you know, where they're taking luxurious vacations and stuff like that. I don't know about vacation for you, but
I haven't had a vacation in years. I mean, we work a lot here all the time, and I was thinking about this after the last group that came through last week. It's probably, when there's a group here, I would say every bit of 70 to 80 hours, just Monday through Friday.
Yeah.
And just so those days.
That goes to the talking about the donations and stuff. I mean, yeah, it takes a lot to keep these horses going here, but it takes a lot for us to fly people in. It takes a lot for us to get this bunkhouse, you know, keep it going, not get it going, but keep it going. We provide them breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and it's good meals. Nobody leaves here hungry whatsoever. You know, we bring in a chef in order to make sure that we have time for the whole entire group, you know. And so they're getting good meals. They're getting good. You can see the quality of the bunkhouse here. At least you guys can. I mean, it's not it's not a shack.
We'll take some pictures. It's when you said bunkhouse at first, I had bunkhouse in my mind. This is nicer than my house.
With an outhouse out back, you know.
Seeing the dirt through the floor. This is nicer than my house. So, I mean, they're coming to a nice place to get a good. The really good stuff, so nobody's going to come here and be disappointed.
Yep. I mean, it takes money to run it, and that's where your money's going, you know, and it's going to good things, helping good people that have supported this country and fought for this country or fighting for your communities right now, you know, especially in today's world. You know, there's a lot of crap going on, and it takes some pretty special individuals to when you don't have the answer and you dial 911, guess who's coming to save you or coming to help you or handle the situation you can't handle. You know, it's the men and women of law enforcement, fire, and EMS. You know, on your worst day, it's there every day. And to think about a lot of those people, and I had a very limited experience, and thankfully in law enforcement, and I worked for a sheriff's office for a little bit, not very long, and you know, you think about it, those guys work, you know, usually I think we worked 4 10s and four days in a row, your community's expecting you to show up whenever dispatch, you know, hands you a call, you know, and think about communities like like this, where Kansas City or even anything in the metro. I mean, you're hundreds of thousands of people that you're serving, and I don't know what a shift's like around here, but you know, a dozen, two dozen, you know, three dozen officers.
I've heard some of the Kansas City, or I mean, people start their shift, there's like 30 or 40 calls pending.
Right. You know. And so those guys are answering calls after calls after calls after calls. People that can't handle their situation, whether it's a domestic, whether it's a shooting, whether it's, you know, their kids choking on something and they're coming to save the situation you can't handle, and they're doing it every day, all day, for 30 years.
And the sad part is they're making pennies on the dollar to what they should be making.
For sure.
Nobody wants to do their job or can do their job.
Yeah.
And they get scrutinized for everything they could possibly do wrong.
Right.
You could go work at a warehouse and make what most of these cops are starting out making, you know. Right. So for those guys to give back to help them is the least any of us could do.
And that's why I think it's so important that you guys don't charge the participants to come here, because there's not economic barrier in people getting help here. You can be the poorest guy or the richest guy and you still get the same quality of help across the board.
100%. Yeah. And that's what we're happy about, is we do have an ability to let anybody pay for anybody. And like Brett said before, I mean, it goes beyond just these gates and everything we do here.
Excellent.
So if somebody has any questions or whatever, do you guys got like an email they can email to, or how does that work, or does it all go through the website?
You can email info@whfv.org, or you can just go on our website and all of our contacts and stuff are on there as well.
Excellent. Yeah, and for Muddy River Tactical, we got MRT Podcast, 15% off the website. Again, be looking for the War Horses for Veterans holsters we're going to be putting out, and that's going to be given back to them as well.
Well, and if Brett's all right with it, I'm going to have him send that video, the one we were talking about where I didn't want to finish watching it.
Brett started tearing up
people can see. It gives them that, you know, not that I didn't believe you, obviously, but until you watch it, you're like, you kind of block out whatever. Well, if you don't get some type of feelings out of watching that, you probably don't have a heart.
You may watch it by yourself the first time. Yeah,
you know what I mean. It's
just don't watch it in front of somebody you don't want to see cry.
Exactly.
Yeah. They showed us in the middle of a restaurant. I mean, we had to stop.
Yeah, bro, I can't watch this kind of stuff here.
It's pretty heartbreaking sometimes when you're watching that stuff. So
excellent. Well, I know I'm really happy about our partnership that we formed with you guys. We're going to keep, you know,
yes, sir,
keep helping you however you can. And if there's anything we can do, just let us know. We're here for you guys. We really believe in what you're doing. You know, amazing ground. We'll get some pictures, videos put up.
Heck yeah.
Get the podcast posted. Is there anything else I didn't get to talk about that you guys wanted to talk about?
Thanks for coming out.
Hey, yeah. One thing.
Yeah.
You told me about your trigger finger last time. Can you go over the trigger?
I'll tell you that one off air.
Off air. Right. War story.
All right. That's not a war horse story.
That's not a war horse story.
Oh, yeah. That's a little personal.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap it up here from War Horses for Veterans. Make sure you check them out. They do great work. If you have any contact or questions, get in contact with them. Or if you can't get in contact with them, find us on the website. We'll make sure to get you in touch with who you need to talk to. And Kevin, you want to wrap us up like always?
Yep. Thank you guys for joining us. And until next time, keep practicing and always be prepared.
Thanks, guys.